I just want to record. Oh.
All right. So I think I already know your answer to this, but just for the sake of asking, are there certain cases where you would say, you know, labels promote diversity and belonging? And are there other instances where perhaps they restrict certain individuals who are questioning and don't really know where they belong and they don't want to take on any identity or label?
So this is actually a very interesting conversation to have. So I mentioned some labels at the start of this interview. I said lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, asexual, ally. Within those, there are identities. So for trans, I said that I personally identify as gender fluid. I did not mention gender fluid in that acronym, but that's because that's one of the myriad of different gender identity labels that has come out to kind of describe different feelings about gender, right? So for me personally, I feel that my gender kind of ebb and flows every couple of months. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a moon cycle, but not. Where from September to December, I was feeling super feminine, and now I could not feel more the opposite and more masculine. My other friend also identifies as gender fluid, but their use of gender fluid focuses more on like the container analogy, where liquid changes shape depending on what cup you're pouring it into. Okay. So he feels that when I am in an activist space and when I'm like in an academic space, I feel feminine. When I'm in my professional space or in my home and family space, I feel masculine. And my gender fluctuates on setting, mm-hmm. where mine kind of fluctuates on time. And we use the same label. So I feel like one thing to understand about labels is that it's as much for the person as much for other people to understand it. Labels are ways of self-expression and self-identification. They are ways that we understand ourselves so that others may understand us. You get your mental house in order, and then you open the doors and let other people come in. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of say, hey, look at this portrait I put up. It's my gender identity or something. So I feel that for a person who wants to avoid labels, right, I would question them if it's, do you truly feel that there is not a label that exists that adequately describes what your gender or your sexual identity is? Or do you just not want to learn what the different labels are and you just don't want to be bothered? Right? Because I get very annoyed when people are like, I just don't use labels. I don't really prefer labels. I just think, like, why label things? Because it's like, labels are really important to people. Labels can be a source of empowerment. And it's kind of rude to belittle someone who takes pride and power in a label. For example, we talk about asexual identities a lot, and asexuality is rife with different labels depending on degrees of sexual attraction. I found a label that was, I think I have this right, but it's autocorosexual, autocorri sexual, meaning that the person experiences sexual attraction and is attracted to sexual imagery, but hesitates before engaging in actual physical intercourse. And I was like, that's so specific, but so useful.
Yeah.
Right? There's demisexual, where a person will say, I don't really experience sexual attraction on sight. I kind of have to get to know the person, and then a sexual urge will come, but I've never experienced a sexual urge on sight. And you have to acknowledge that that's very different than other people who are able to have these, like, meet and greet, love at first sight, or, you know, one night stand encounters. That's a different way of having a sexuality. And so these different labels, if you're willing to put the time in to learn about them, could help describe you, and then through the label you can find people who are like you, and then find community and affirmation. Like, I'm not weird. There's other people that are just like me, and they're weird, but they're an okay weird. They're my friends weird.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I would question anyone who says that I don't really prefer labels. It's fine if, like, you haven't found the label for you, I guess. Actually, we did a history of the trans label presentation. Mm-hmm. And in that presentation, we included Miley Cyrus, which often raises eyebrows.
Yeah.
And Miley Cyrus actually identifies as pansexual and as gender fluid.
Mm-hmm.
But her motivations for picking those are, again, different than the two that I've given you already for gender fluid. Miley Cyrus prefers those two because they're the most vague.
Okay.
They're kind of the most not-a-label that she was able to find.
Mm-hmm.
Pansexuality meaning I'm kind of just attracted to whoever I'm attracted to, and it's just not on a basis of gender. I'll let you know when I know. And gender fluid meaning my gender is, it can be anything. Right?
Yeah.
And so there's different motivations for why people pick labels. And Miley Cyrus's, in that case, was that she wanted to avoid labels. So she picked ones that she felt were the most open. And that was useful for her. You know what I mean? So it's a tool. It's a tool for yourself so you can understand yourself. It's a tool for others so that other people can kind of understand where you're coming from and what they're dealing with when they're being your friend. And it can be a tool for community and finding other people like you. But I feel that they have a very important place in our community and our society, and they do much more good than any perceived harm.
Okay. And then just a quick question, going back to, I guess, the beginning of this. Because I personally don't experience this. Like, I am very feminine, and I, you know, that's just who I am. So I've never experienced that gender fluidness. Is that based? Not based. Does that have anything, any correlation with any gender binary or anything? Or is it just a feeling that you have? Like, how much of that...
Right. I feel that it can definitely... In its core, right, when you talk about a binary, you're talking about a set of two things, right? A lot of people talk about gender as a spectrum or sexual orientation as a spectrum, like the Kinsey scale or something, and they don't realize that that's still binarist, because you're setting point A and you're setting point B.
Sure.
And you're putting gradients in between, but by being more feminine, you're inherently being less masculine.
Yeah.
And that's not how I feel my gender identity works. The reason that I feel more masculine now, which is really funny, I call myself the walking embodiment of fragile masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
Because I basically spent 3 months telling people, yeah, I'm feeling really feminine. My gender identity is feeling really feminine right now. My gender expression is very feminine right now. And I got so much positive affirmation from people that in 3 months I was able to receive all the confirmation for a feminine identity that I felt that I never got for my masculine identity.
Mm-hmm.
Because masculine identity, I feel, is so narrow and so performative that it's hard to receive confirmation for it. So now I'm back because I'm like, I know I can be feminine, but I want to be both. I want to do it all. I don't want to feel that there's a court that I can't play on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So obviously I just held up both my hands and I said one was feminine, one was masculine. And that's a binarist view, right? But I'm acknowledging that I'm not more of one because I'm less of the other.
Okay.
We do a non-binary spectrum gender model, which is basically, imagine one spectrum that is just for degree of masculinity from 0 to 10, from 0 to 100, with 100 being very masculine, 0 being not masculine at all. And then another spectrum that's for femininity, 0 for feminineness and 10 for super feminine. And then a third one for gender queerness. It's just like, I don't know, middle ground, maybe I just feel really something else.
Yeah.
And that'd be a non-binary view because you're supposed to plot yourself along each of them, right? So for yourself, you said that you feel very feminine and not very masculine most of the time. So you would place yourself fairly low on the masculine one, fairly high on the feminine one, and I'm not going to speak for you for where you would place yourself on the third one if you would place yourself at all. But you're engaging with all of them separately.
Okay.
You're not saying that one more of one equals less of the other,
sure,
which is one of the downfalls of a binarist view. So, gender fluid, as I use it, is non-binarist.
Okay.
It's a subset of a non-binary identity that falls under the transgender umbrella. Some people can use it in a very binarist way, but binarism is more of a state of mind of acknowledging that the genders are not a zero-sum game. And if your gender identity is operating with that, then you're operating in a non-binary mode. There are many trans people who are binary trans people, meaning they were born one gender, and they're like, I'm not feeling this at all. I need to be completely the other one. The other one, meaning there's one other option. The opposite is another one that we hear. So the not what I am right now, the opposite of me, on the other side of me. There's some other analogies that kind of will reveal binarist language. When you look within transgender and when you look within non-binary gender theory and you see all the different kinds of genders there can be, you start to realize, like, there's no way. There's no way you can put all of these and be operating with men and women as bookends. Mm-hmm. One example that I use is that on, like, the Kinsey scale type system, the binary spectrum, someone who is bi-gender, meaning that they identify with two genders, would be in the middle, right? But someone who is agender, meaning that they don't identify with any gender, would also be in the middle. Someone who's genderqueer would probably also be stuck in the middle. So there's no useful distinction between all these middle identities if you use feminine and masculine as the point ends. But I know this is like a lot of visuals, which is probably... But I have a PowerPoint, I'll send it. But once you separate that spectrum out and you start using a non-binary view, stuff to those gender identities start to make a lot more sense.
Okay. And then I guess a follow-up on that is, what about gender roles? Does that have anything to do?
So we use gender expression and gender identity, right? So gender identity would be who you feel inside yourself to be. So my gender identity would be gender fluid or male, right? I often check both. I often say I'm man or male and other, and I write in gender fluid. I lost my thought. What was your question?
About like traditional gender roles and how that relates.
And then the other one that we use is gender expression, which is, right now my gender expression is masculine, right? So the ways that I try to communicate my gender to other people is in a masculine mode. Mm-hmm. Gender roles is really interesting when you start to talk about LGBT, because you kind of have this question of like, what behavior is gendered or not, right? So in a heteronormative cisgender society, kitchen work is gendered feminine. Yard work, like let's do household duties, yard work is gendered masculine. Repair work, maintenance work, is gendered masculinely. But childcare is gendered femininely. But what do you do in a couple where both people are of the same gender? Both people aren't going to just not cook. People aren't going to just, like, abandon their child because they're just busy outside mowing the lawn two times a day. Queer couples adopt non-normative gender roles because that's how they need to survive.
Sure.
They're operating off of a different script because they're not a heteronormative couple, just from the basis of the two elements that you put together.
Yeah, yeah.
So gender roles in LGBT families and in LGBT people is a really funny thing because they tend to just work it out amongst themselves. And you'll find that in most successful heterosexual couples, a similar thing happens, where a couple where a person is obligated to do something based off of their gender, that person, if they're not okay with that, will build a lot of resentment around that task. And more successful couples negotiate tasks. So a man in a couple might be like, I'm training to be a chef. I go to Le Cordon Bleu, or, you know, I'm in hospitality management at FIU. I would like to cook the dinners. I would like to make breakfast, and I would like to cook. I'd like to be the kitchen person. And the woman of that couple would be like, great. Thank you. I hate cooking. I would much rather, you know, I'll do the dishes, let's say. Like, you cook and I'll do the dishes. And that's a negotiation that happens. And the same thing happens in LGBT couples. It's just that there isn't a prerequisite for which person should be doing something.
Sure. Okay.
So in practice, it works itself out.
Yeah. And I think we've covered everything. Is there anything else that you wanted to add that I haven't brought up or that you've been dying to get out there?
What's kind of... If I did ask anything, it would kind of be like a reverse interview.
Uh-huh.
Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
What kind of... Like, how'd you find me? What's your relationship with, like, activist work?
If
you have one.
I mean, I'm not directly involved in anything. I'm always so busy, and I'd like to get more involved, but life is crazy. But, I mean, you know, I'm a really strong feminist. I'm all for saving the planet. I think that's probably, like, the biggest thing that I've really been directly involved in.
Ecofeminism, DIY.
And then obviously, you know, I very much care for the LGBTQ community. And, you know, it affects me personally because I have so many friends and family friends that fall into these categories, and I don't want to see them victims of assault and anything, you know.
Harassment.
Anything. Like, it would break my heart.
Yeah, all the shitty stuff.
You know, I just... Yeah, and I don't even know quite where I fall, which is why, you know, I bring up the whole labels thing because I think that's so interesting, and I still don't really know where I fall into things, other than I know that I'm very feminine, and that's all I'm quite sure of.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There was more to your question, wasn't it?
Yeah, the standpoint, I'll go off of your answer because I was kind of fishing.
Yeah.
That whole thing of, like, we take people wherever they're at,
mm-hmm.
that not only includes for, like, how woke they might be,
yeah.
but also, like, their identities, mm-hmm. right? So, like, people might not know where they're at right now, and, like, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we're there to work through those questions and work through those answers. You know what I mean? So one thing that I'll say, or one thing that I tell people is, like, forgive yourself and give yourself the time to figure it out,
mm-hmm.
right? You're under no obligation to anyone to know these answers right now other than to yourself. And we're all under personal journeys. Sexuality and gender is completely fluid, so the second that you figure it out, it might completely change out from under you. That's the thing that happened to me with the gender fluidity, where I was, like, really feeling I thought I was feeling my feminine mode, and then I was like, why do I start getting so upset when people call me, like, hey girl, or she pronouns, or when people call me mom? I'm kind of like the caregiver friend. And so it's like, my friend will text me, Queen Mother, what are you doing later today? I'm like, why does that text make me so mad? And I had to, like, self-analyze, go in, check out my internal house, and it's like, oh, I don't feel validated for masculine identity. That's a problem. I gotta let people know. My gender identity just kind of shifted. Or my gender expression might need to shift a little bit. How other people perceive me kind of needs to shift a little bit because I'm not feeling good right now. And that happened out from under me. I don't know... Mercury retrograde or something. Like, I don't know what happened. I like relating it to the planets, Neptune retrograde or something. But, you know, the other thing for the safe space is, like, providing the resources, providing the time, the patience for people to, like, kind of go through that process of self-discovery,
mm-hmm.
I think is important. You know, part of the cue is questioning. So, like, that's a valid identity for, like, the LGBTQA community. And it's, like, you're under no obligation if you come out of that and you're, like, I'm heterosexual or I'm cisgender after, you know, your questioning period. Like, we're not going to get mad. We're not going to be like, you owe us club dues. Like, it's not. It's basically just, like, a community that's built as a safety net for people who start to question those things. And then if they bounce out or if they stay with us in the hammock, then it's fine. Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to get more involved with you guys and stuff, so keep me in the loop. Yeah, and thank you so much for this interview.
Thanks.